Hello and welcome to episode 784 of Effectively Wild, the daily podcast from Baseball Prospectus, presented by the Play Index at baseballreference.com. I'm Ben Lindbergh of 538, joined by Sam Miller of Baseball Prospectus. Hello.
Yo.
Came very close to not doing a podcast today. We announced that we were not doing a podcast today. It's kind of crunch time for the book right now. But in the end, we are still a daily podcast. We're doing a quick one on the Jason Hayward signing by the Cubs. We talked about Hayward some yesterday, but we will talk a little bit about how he fits in with his new team. We don't even know the terms yet as we are recording. The only thing we know is that the deal is supposedly for less than $200 million, which I guess based on our conversation, that alone is maybe enough to say that you like this deal?
Probably. What would be the, I could envision ways I wouldn't. If it were 6 years, probably. I wouldn't
well,
like
sure,
it.
Well, sure, yeah.
If it were, I mean, if you imagine a opt-out where, say, Hayward gets $30 million for the first three, like let's say it's 8 years and 200, rounding off, 8 years and 200. And the first,
I would imagine it will be something very close to that.
And like, let's say hypothetically, the first three were for $100 million. Like that, it's just heavily front loaded. And then after that, he gets an opt out where you really can't say, I mean, Hayward's going to be, let's say there was an opt out after three. Again, like who knows? Hypothetically. I mean, I'm giving hypotheticals because the only other way to say it is, oh yeah, Jason Hayward's good and adding him is good if you don't know any of the terms. So, all right. So 3 years and an opt out. He'll be 29 when the opt out would kick in. And so there'd be a lot of potential upside left. And if it were heavily front loaded so that you're, you know, really locking in a lot of expensive years at the front and giving up any hope of that at the end, I would readjust my opt out math, I guess I'm saying. Otherwise, yeah. I mean, sure. What did I say? 220 yesterday?
Yesterday you said 240.
240, yeah. So that's less than this.
Yeah. You also, and I hate to bring this up. I love to bring this up.
Oh.
You took the over on the Bowden 9 years and 207. Yeah.
This is not the best one for me. This is, it is really striking how badly I've done on this one.
It's been a disaster.
It has been, yeah. might not do that anymore.
So there was an article today at BP by Matt Trueblood about basically the things that we said about Hayward yesterday, about the Verducci article, all the baseball men expressing doubts about Hayward and Matt sort of defending Hayward. And we probably don't need to make that case again. We've said it in the past. Most people listening to this podcast probably appreciate Jason Hayward's merits. So maybe the more interesting thing here is how he fits into the Cubs. The first tweet I got after this signing was from someone who said that maybe the Cubs will be the MLB Golden State Warriors that we were lamenting the non-existence of yesterday. I think that is probably a bit premature. On the other hand, when you look at the Cubs depth chart right now, it's a pretty intimidating team.
So they replace, right. So they take last year's team, but they replace Fowler basically with Hayward.
Yeah.
In one way of swapping it out. They replace Castro with Zobrist. They replace.
And you get.
They have a full year.
Full seasons full of Schwarber, seasons, Russell.
Right. Full seasons of Schwarber, Russell, an
Cahill.
Even fuller season of Bryant. And you have all those guys a year older, everybody moving toward the good ages rather than away from the good ages.
Yeah.
And you have added John Lackey to the rotation. And there is not, there's, it still seems to me there's absolutely nothing about the Cubs situation that you would look at this and prohibit them from making another move tomorrow. I mean, they have the pieces to give up. I mean, they could trade top prospects. They could trade depth prospects without even noticing. And I mean, certainly Javi Baez is looks like a redundant piece who would have tremendous, tremendous trade value right now if they wanted to do that. And I still contend that there's no reason to think that the Cubs can't spend, like, if not quite infinite monies, like you know, top five payroll. I mean, they're the Cubs. Why not?
Yeah. Our friend Sahadev Sharma from BP just tweeted that he's hearing that they are working on more significant moves, that Soler is a possible person who could go. And you're right, Baez makes sense too. So yeah, normally you can't just do the thing where you look at a 97 win team and you just say, okay, they're a 97 win team and
Real quick, you can finish that. But yeah. John Morosi just tweeted, Cubs have had trade dialogue with the Indians, parentheses, Carlos Carrasco, Danny Salazar. So just imagine having Carlos Carrasco now in this rotation. Man.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's good. And then, they apparently can just, like, there's no shortage of lousy starters that they can turn into dominant relievers.
That
as well.
Too. Sure. Yeah. Normally you can't just look at a 97 win team and say that whatever made them a 97 win team still exists and everything else is on top of that. Like, that's a trap that you can fall into, because usually when you're a 97 win team, a lot of things had to go right and there were maybe some fluky performances. And so you project some regression there, or you're losing good players, that sort of thing. But you look at the Cubs and, I mean, you wouldn't really project anyone to be that much worse than they were. I mean, Arrieta maybe will not be Cy Young winner again.
Yes, he maybe will not
he will
be
not.
Exactly what he was in the second
half.
But
possibly allow a run in the second half next season.
Exactly.
But other than that, I mean, you know, Rizzo was really good, but Rizzo is really good. He was basically as good as he was the year before. And Hayward is going to be better than Fowler was, even though Fowler was good. And right, there's no reason not to expect Bryant to be as good or better, Russell to be as good or better. Schwarber maybe might not be as good on a per plate appearance basis, but he'll have more plate appearances.
Exactly. I would be very surprised, honestly, if he were that good. And but he's, you know, he'll be more valuable.
Right. Yeah.
In full season.
Mm-hmm. And
you might argue that Montero is both coming off a better year than he had shown and is at an age where you'd expect decline from a catcher, and they don't have they don't enter the season with the same sort of depth that they did last year. And David Ross is also older. Now, on the other hand, maybe you argue that Schwarber can hang for 60 games at catcher and that changes everything. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if people are arguing that.
I kind of buy it. I don't know. Yeah. That was one of the last things I wrote for Grantland. What do you do with Schwarber? And yeah, and Lester was Lester-esque. He could be Lester-esque again. And now they have Lackey, and you would expect to get more out of Soler if Soler is still around. So there isn't a whole lot of, you can't really point to a whole lot of positions where they should be worse than they were last year. And now you can point to a couple where they should be better. It's definitely one of those lineups that, you know, people will be like, this is the 1,000 run lineup, and then it will score 800
840,
because
yeah,
right, because something always happens, and that's, you know, no team scores that many runs, but it is pretty intimidating. There's no weak spot. If the weak spot is Addison Russell, there's no real weak spot.
I think the weak spot is probably catcher.
Yeah. I mean, Montero's fine.
Good. That's what I'm saying. Russell's fine.
That's the worst you can say about any spot, is that it's average.
Yeah.
So
it's a good team.
It's a really good team. And this is sort of similar to the Greinke signing in a way, in that by signing Greinke, the Diamondbacks deprived their division rivals of Greinke. And the Cubs have now done the same with Hayward, in that Hayward was good for the Cardinals last year. And if the Cubs hadn't signed him, the Cardinals might have re-signed him. So there's potential to steal some Hayward wins from St. Louis. And yeah, I mean, what would you even do to put the finishing touches on the Cubs right now? I mean, what could be better? I guess your fifth starter.
Well, I would kind of sort of rephrase that as your second starter. I mean, I've always been kind of the low guy on John Lester, just as a career. And he's good, but he's still, you know, if the Dodgers had Kershaw and Greinke, the Cubs don't have that 1-2. Lester is not that guy who you write in the win in game two. He's a good guy. He can hang with anybody. He's a great player to have on your team and so on. It's just that he's not the sure win. And so, I don't know. I mean, if you could, you go get Jose Fernandez. Then you have number four starter is John Lackey. And you can pretty much roll through the postseason without ever going to a starting pitcher who's not favored in that game.
Mm-hmm. It's always nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know if BP has team level projections yet, or if that's something that comes next year, but based on the Fangraphs depth charts before this move, the Dodgers and the Cubs were kind of in their own little tier 1 and 2, about 4 wins above anyone else. And the Cubs were about a win and a half behind the Dodgers. And that was with no Hayward. So projecting Hayward for whatever, 4 wins or something, you would expect them to leapfrog the Dodgers and be projected to be the best team in baseball. That probably doesn't take into account schedule, and maybe they'll have a tougher schedule than most teams. But still, as we look at the roster right now, before they make other moves, you could make a pretty good case that the Cubs are the best team in baseball.
Yes. As they are now, I think that they are undeniably the best team in baseball.
And they're only going to get better between now and opening day, barring injuries.
Probably. That is probably true. It would not make much sense for them to start getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that if you're the Pirates, does this change what you're doing at all? Are there any teams that their strategy changes now because there is such a clear powerhouse in the division and or league for the next 2 or 3 years?
Everyone is still good enough that you could envision all three teams making it again, just like last year.
Yeah.
So probably not. I don't know if it affects things for the Brewers and Reds are already sort of just languishing or rebuilding as it is. And the other teams are still good enough to contend.
You could almost maybe argue maybe that it's good. It's good news for the Pirates. Maybe because the Cubs winning the division and the Cardinals being the wild card is much better for the other wild card team than the Cardinals winning the division and the Cubs winning the wild card. You know, the Cardinals just don't have something like Arrieta that they can throw at you. So if you have
Wainwright,
if you're that, it could turn out that Wainwright comes back and is a top five pitcher, but it's less likely than that Arrieta will be.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, a one game playoff is essentially having an entire series where you only face the best pitcher. And so if you are the Pirates and you're looking at having to go through Arrieta or go through Wainwright to get to the next round, Wainwright, not knowing how Wainwright will be, not knowing anything about what Wainwright will be next year, but that's a stretch too.
I mean, it does kind of lower the Pirates' aspirations to fourth straight wild card game.
Yes, yes. And also, it is overwhelmingly likely that the Pirates and Cardinals will not be the two wild cards. Somebody else will sneak in, or one of those two will end up winning the division, or one of those two will end up, you know, winning 78 games because baseball. So it's not like anybody's planning around who the likely wild card starter is going to be against them next October. Like the Pirates, I just imagine Neil Huntington seeing this news and sort of clapping his hands together and going, done. We're good. I mean, that's not really likely.
Right. Well, that's depressing.
Yeah.
So,
And home field, by the way, home field in all three of those. So in a world with one wild card, they would have been in the playoffs all three times.
Yeah.
So that's depressing. That's really what's depressing.
So I don't know what the Cubs do in the outfield. They don't really have a true center fielder right now on their MLB depthcharts.com depth chart. Jason Hayward is listed as the center fielder.
Why do you think Hayward is... What is the story for why Hayward is not a center fielder? I mean, when he came up, who did they have in center field? And did they have that guy who was always with the Pirates and the Braves? 2010. Yeah, they had Nate McLouth.
Blocked by Nate McClaff, who batted 190 that year.
Yeah, but I mean, he was gonna play, and he had won a gold glove. He had won a quote gold glove end quote 1 year early in 2008. So I mean, it's like it's not whether he was blocked as a player by Nate McClaff, but whether it was just if that's why if Nate McClaff was seen as being a center fielder, that Hayward and Wright fit better than McClaff and Wright, and that McClaff and center fit at least as well or better than a rookie Hayward and center. I don't know. I mean, I'm wondering if that's I'm wondering if you can explain Hayward being in right field exclusively through the center fielders that the Braves have had through the years, because they did go out. They went out and got Bourne, who is obviously a center fielder and not a right fielder. They went out and got Upton, who is. And so then are they getting those center fielders because they don't think Hayward could be a center fielder, or is Hayward a right fielder just because they got those center fielders?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Hayward was never a center fielder in the minors. I mean, he played the occasional game there, but he was a right fielder all the way through. So it wasn't like he moved when he got to the majors to accommodate someone else.
Good point.
And yeah, I mean, people have speculated about whether he could play center. And if you, I mean, if you think that he can play center, if that's what the Cubs think, then he's a even bigger bargain. I mean, if everyone else sees him as a right fielder and you see him as a center fielder, then you should sign Jason Hayward because he's going to be a better deal for you if he can actually do it, if you're right about that. And well, I don't know, people always talk about this with corner outfielders who have great defensive ratings, like Carl Crawford, who just didn't want to play center, wasn't comfortable playing center. Hayward has played the occasional game there. I don't know. I mean, I've read articles about why he isn't one, and seems like it's because he's big. He's very tall and he doesn't fit the center field profile, and maybe there are actual scouting reasons for it, but you would think, I mean, so he's played 233 innings in center. He hasn't committed an error, and he's got pretty decent defensive ratings in that small sample. So, you know, I mean, how bad could he be? Like, Shin-Soo Choo played center a couple of years ago, and he was bad, but he did it. You can do it. Hayward wouldn't be that bad. So if you stick him in center, and then you have Schwarber and Soler or whoever flanking you, I mean, it's still probably going to be a better defensive outfield, because the Cubs had a lousy defensive outfield last year. They ranked 27th in outfield defensive runs saved at negative 26. So you would think just plugging Hayward in there, even as a center fielder, how bad could he be? And his bat would obviously be far above par at that position. So
yeah, I'm trying to remember where, I think Matt Trueblood wrote this, and I'm trying to remember where he wrote it. And so now I'm looking at all the various places that Matt Trueblood has written in the last year. But I think that Matt made the case that the Cubs have, this regime has been comfortable punting center field defense, maybe because it's a Wrigley thing, but that it has never been a priority for them, and that they've put a lot of guys out there who are average or worse at center field. And so, yeah, that might be their plan. It'd be nice to know if we knew. It'd be nice if Theo were here.
Yeah. Let me look up. I can. I have a list of the square footage of each stadium's outfield by field, so I can see where Wrigley ranks on that list. Center field square footage. Wrigley ranks third fewest square feet in center at Wrigley. Goes Angel Stadium, 32,900 feet. Nationals Park, 33,200. Fenway Park, 33,200. And then fourth, I guess, Wrigley Field, 33,500. So it's a small center field. So if that means that you can get away with a less speedy, rangy center fielder, then they should be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Would love to keep talking about this for a long time, but as we discussed, we have another thing to do soon. So we should wrap it up.
It's a bonus podcast. So every minute was a gift.
How much lower than $200 million would this have to be for you to be convinced that this fits the Lackey Zobrist conversation we had about whether players are taking less to be part of Chicago's big historic moment.
Yeah, well, Heyman said in his tweet, apparently taking less to be at Addison and Clark because there was a report that the Nationals had offered him $200 million. So if he is taking less, and you speculated about Zobrist taking less to play for the Cubs, and he said it was because it's closer to his home mostly. So I don't know how much of it is Cubs factor, but yeah, I mean, why would you not want to be the final piece that makes a team into the best team in baseball?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Yeah, okay.
By the way, some late breaking contract news that has come out while we've been talking. Bob Nightingale says it's an 8-year, $184 million deal. And Peter Gammons says that there are opt-outs. And I say plural, there's more than one opt-out. Jesse Rogers says that the first opt-out comes 3 years into the contract. So as we said earlier, he would be a free agent again after age 29. So obviously some significant value for Hayward there that makes the $184 million total somewhat deceptive, but still clearly a deal that makes the Cubs much better than they were without Hayward. Speaking of creative Cubs contract offers, so you can send us emails for the long-awaited listener email show that we will get to next week at podcast@baseballperspectus.com. You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/effectivelywild. And you can rate and review and subscribe to the show on iTunes. Support our sponsor, The Play Index. Go to baseballreference.com, use the coupon code BP, and get the discounted price of $30 on a 1-year subscription. If you'd like to buy our book for less than the list price, there is an Amazon sale going on right now. You can use the coupon code 25OFFBOOK. To get a 25% discount on our book. The only rule is it has to work.
Yeah, probably the last discount that Amazon will offer between now and then, too.
That's right. This is your last chance. So I think that's valid all weekend. So have a nice couple days off. We will talk to you next week. This is the best chance we'll ever have.